A minute and a half past 7 o'clock as our live coverage of the Gorbachev visit continues. We were chatting with Evelyn Davidhiser just a few moments ago, who is a political scientist at the University of Minnesota, about her reactions to the comments by President Gorbachev to the business leaders. And it's a possibility, Gary, that once these business leaders have a chance to get over to our broadcast area at the Radisson, that we may have a chance to visit with one or two of them.
Mm-hmm.
We can hold out some hope for that. In the meantime, I think we have some other interesting information there.
Let me ask you, Evelyn, one quick question here, back to the issue we were talking about before. From what you heard from President Gorbachev today about the issues of how you're going to get your profits out of the Soviet Union if you go to do business there, you think anything he said today is going to reassure these people that, what the heck, let's do big business if we can do it?
I'm not sure he said anything that earth-shattering as far as convertibility goes. Although it strikes me that the American business community has been fairly blasé about the problem so far. Crystal is the only one who raised it today. American business people seem to be anxious to get in, and then they realize what the problems are. Not after mm-hmm. they're in, but as they're going through the negotiations. So, I mean, what Gorbachev did promise today was a more rapid move toward convertibility, including the kinds of price changes that have to be made to make convertibility possible. But not a concrete timetable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that things have changed after this meeting as far as convertibility goes.
Well, there's no doubt that when President Gorbachev announced that he wanted to meet with business leaders, he got the entrepreneurial juices of many local business leaders flowing. Experts in international trade said the recent interest shown in trade with the Soviet Union has been simply unprecedented. But while the Soviet Union does represent a tremendous, virtually untapped market, the risks and difficulties of doing business there are certainly as large. And Gail Marks Jarvis spoke with businesses that have ventured into the Soviet market.
Здравствуй, Даша. Меня зовут Татьяна Алексеевна.
This tape helps Soviet children overcome fears, and it's sold in the Soviet Union by a Minneapolis company that seems fearless. Human Development Industries is a gambler, one of the few local companies with a joint venture in the Soviet Union. In a year, it hasn't made a cent on Soviet sales and probably won't for some time. Instead, it's spending money. The problem is rubles. That's what the Soviets used to buy Human Development's tapes. But rubles can't leave the Soviet Union or be converted to dollars. So the firm's Soviet partner is simply stashing the rubles away until the Soviets change the monetary system. The idea is that someday the stash will be worth something. Human Development President Michael Labrosse thinks the risk is worth it.
They're planning on getting the ruble to a convertible currency. Now it's going to take a while, but they're moving down that road. So those of us who can get established, basically with contacts, have a good product that we can work with, and hold on while the economy gets set up, I think we're going to be in good shape.
Human Development Industries is one of the smallest and riskiest of 1,200 American joint ventures in the Soviet Union and underscores the gambles involved in business there. But at a time when Western Europe and Asia are becoming increasingly competitive, the Soviet Union, hungry for foreign investment, is alluring to business pioneers. 30 Minnesota companies are doing business there in one form or another, and many others are scoping out Soviet possibilities. But Steve Nelson, a Dorsey & Whitney international law attorney, says few businesses that explore Soviet ventures actually follow through. Businesses often become overwhelmed in the bureaucracy or during negotiations. Some even get deals approved by the government and are shocked when they fall through later.
Even in some cases, expatriates have moved with their families to the Soviet Union and found themselves totally stymied because the necessary facilities couldn't be obtained, the necessary practical arrangements on the ground couldn't be made. So there's a whole range of frustration out there.
Joint ventures are risky anywhere, but in the Soviet Union, they're even riskier. Only about 5% have survived. Nelson says American businesses in the Soviet Union face an economic system in disarray an uncertain future government, and cultural barriers with business partners. Basic practices like how to set prices or produce products consumers want are foreign. Even with changes in the system, many people who head businesses do not have the fundamental American goal of making a profit. But Honeywell is a company that's making it work. Its primary role in its joint venture is teaching its Soviet partner to manage American style. And the company is making a profit. But Alfredo Maselli, vice president of Honeywell's international operations, says it is a challenge because cultures are so different.
Who is in charge as in the Soviet Union has total control of everybody else? It's so amazing to see when we are sitting at a board meeting the Western side of people are interactive and asking questions and stating opinion, sometimes disagreeing. I haven't seen anything like this from our Soviet counterpart.
While the biggest deterrent to American business is probably the ruble, the lack of dollars is leading to ingenuity. Pillsbury, for example, has an idea. Grow peas and corn in the Soviet Union, can them there, and sell them there, but also export from there to Europe. The idea is to spend Russian rubles on production, pay Russian wages rather than higher European wages, but sell in lucrative markets outside the Soviet Union. The concept is still in its infancy. Pillsbury has just begun an experiment, growing small plots of corn and peas to see if Soviet growing conditions are good. If it works, the company may take the idea a step further. But John Lanker, Pillsbury's vice president of international operations, says entering the Soviet market must be done slowly and carefully.
There aren't a lot of substitutes for being first, but being first and right is even more important. So we aren't rushing to be ahead of anybody. We are moving forward so that we can at least keep up with other people.
Even though Pillsbury's moving cautiously, maneuvering through the Soviet system can be even slower. No one's sure how to navigate the system, sometimes not even the Soviets. Medtronic, for example, has just scored a tremendous success, but it took 10 years to get there. The company is selling the Soviets' oxygenators for heart surgery, and Medtronic is getting paid $6 million in dollars. But Daniel Luthringhauser, Medtronic's vice president of international development, said that until about a month ago, the company didn't really know if it was any closer to a sale than it had been for years.
It's still a mystery as to why the timing was what it is.
All of this, according to attorney Nelson, has made his clients and other Americans very reluctant to venture into the Soviet Union. But there's another side to risk. If a company succeeds, where few competitors dare to go now, the chance of staying out front later may be much greater. I'm Gail Marks Jarvis.
All right, it's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. Let's go over to Lauren Amoto at the Radisson Plaza Hotel right across the street there. See how that motorcade is doing, Lauren?
Well, Bob, the motorcade is just getting started up now. In fact, the Secret Service people and all the security people just came running out a few seconds ago while the report was concluding. And there's the limousine bearing President Gorbachev, we believe, there with the people on the running boards. And they're moving out of here at a pretty fast clip. No crowds around here because this whole street has been cordoned off, sealed off to the public because of security concerns. So unlike some of the other stops along President Gorbachev's tour today, there's not really much opportunity for the public to show its either pleasure or displeasure with him or his policies.
Lauren, it's not absolutely clear to me. Is Mrs. Gorbachev now with him in the motorcade, or do you think that they left from the Watson home out to control data by their own on their
own
power?
That's the last that we knew, Bob. They were still out at the Watson home. In fact, while that meeting was wrapping up here, we were, as you probably were, seeing on video and hearing also that they were still out at the Watson home, still sharing coffee and cookies or whatever with the family.
Okay. Well, it looks like things are pretty well wrapping up over there. Lauren, are you in a position to visit with some of the business leaders? Are
well,
they coming
we hope
out?
To be here, Bob. I'm only about 20 feet away. We're going to see if we can make that final 20-foot jaunt. Right now, as of yet, none of the leaders have really come out of the the hotel en masse. A few of them are supposed to be headed over here to this side of the street, to the Marriott, where Agriculture Commissioner Jim Nichols has put together a meeting of some of the agriculture leaders to sort of give their instant response and their instant reaction, what it was President Gorbachev had to say about concerns to them.
Okay. All right. Well, Lauren, if you have a chance to get a hold of some of those people, by all means, holler back.
I'm working on it, Bob.
We will definitely do that.
Okay.
This, of course, is not the first time that a Soviet leader has visited the Midwest. 31 years ago, Nikita Khrushchev stopped over in Iowa on his way from California to a summit with President Eisenhower. The visit to the Soviet, or by the Soviet Union's Corn King, as he was called, caused a good deal of excitement in central Iowa. Bill Wareham spoke with some Iowans who remember that visit, and he has this report.
Nikita Khrushchev arrived in Des Moines by jet from San Francisco on September 23, 1959. But Lauren Soth, an editorial writer for the Des Moines Register and Tribune, began laying groundwork for the visit more than 4 years earlier.
I wrote a series of editorials beginning in February 1955, advocating an exchange of agricultural delegations between the Soviet Union and the United States. President Eisenhower said he thought it was a good idea, and we exchanged delegations in June of 1955.
A key member of that and subsequent delegations was the late Roswell Garst, a farmer from Coon Rapids, a town about 60 miles northwest of Des Moines. Garst developed a close relationship with the Soviets, advising them and selling them seed corn. As a result, Soth says one of the first confirmed stops on Khrushchev's 1959 tour was a visit to the Garst farm.
Well, we were all worked up about it, but general sentiment was more hostile to the Soviet Union then than it is now.
Soth says that the Iowans who ended up in close proximity to Khrushchev held their hostility in check. But the Register's political reporter, George Mills, says the strong anti-communist sentiment was evident in the crowds that gathered to get a glimpse of the premier, lending an air of tension to the entire 30-hour visit.
He stayed at the Hotel Fort Des Moines in downtown Des Moines overnight. And when he came out in the morning, why, there were riflemen on adjoining buildings, all pointing their guns down at the crowd, the dense crowd around the entrance to the hotel. There were negative signs in the crowd. One of them said, the only good communist is a dead one. And I remember another one saying, we butcher hogs, not people. But Khrushchev apparently took no notice of them when he came out.
Harry Bookie, 11 years old at the time, doesn't remember the signs, but he does remember Khrushchev's good nature. Bookie's father, Lester, owned a Des Moines meatpacking plant.
So we, like many people in Minnesota are doing now, we thought it would be good advertising and a good experience for him if he visited our meatpacking plant, which was pretty modern.
Khrushchev had some extra time on his schedule, so the meatpacking plant was added to the itinerary, giving young Harry a front row seat for all the excitement.
My father told my brother and I, my brother I think was 16 at the time, that we could come down and watch it, provided we got nowhere near the action.
Harry says he had no problem with that plan. In fact, he says at the time it held a certain appeal.
They went to the kill floor where they killed the cattle. And I was a little squeamish at the time and didn't really want to go through it. So I kind of felt like I would wait outside. And as it turns out, they really, in a sense, made a circle, and you come out where you go in. So as a result of my not taking the tour through the kill floor, I was standing outside when they came out of the kill floor, and Khrushchev immediately walked over towards me and my brother. You know, there were a few pleasantries, and then I said, you may have beat us to the moon, but we make better hot dogs. And so that got a lot of laughs, and it was on quite a few of the national news networks.
Harry Bookie's attempt at international diplomacy might stand out less today had U.S. and Soviet leaders followed through on plans for regular exchanges. but the downing of a U.S. spy plane over Soviet territory 8 months after Bucky and Khrushchev met over a hot dog chilled relations, and the two sides put off any thought of more visits for almost 31 years. I'm Bill Wareham reporting.
16 and a half minutes past 7 as our live coverage of the Gorbachev trip to Minnesota continues. Gary, we have a bit of an update here on the itinerary for the balance of the evening. President Gorbachev, of course, has now left the Radisson Plaza area and is en route to Control Data headquarters in Bloomington. Now, we were wondering what was the story with Raisa Gorbachev at the Watson home. Well, she is going to apparently meet her husband at Twin Cities International Airport.
That's skip CDC altogether.
Skip CDC altogether, right. Apparently, the president will get to CDC sometime around 7:30 or thereabouts, and then just before 8, he'll leave Control Data and head out to the airport. So that's pretty much the latest we have in the itinerary.
Must have been some good cookies over at the Watson.
Well, it certainly seems like it must have been. They must have had a pretty good time over there. Plus, she stopped at Snyder Drugstore and apparently bought some little Nintendo cookies or gizmos or something.
Do you notice, Evelyn, how he wrinkles his nose at the very thought of it all?
Well, let me find that little item on the wire here.
Stephen Smith has been with the Gorbachev motorcade all day long and joins us now by cellular phone. Stephen?
Well, right now I'm in the back of a Wagoneer tooling down 35 going towards Bloomington and Control Data. We're moving along at a rapid pace here. It's a little bit easier, I think. There are fewer cars in the motorcade, as you know, since there are now two separate motorcades running along. Did you fellas happen to get a chance to get the Paul Shirky meeting on the radio?
No, we missed most of that.
Okay.
And,
what we had was pretty far off mic and didn't make any sense, frankly.
Right. Well, what was happening there was Paul Shirky was meeting with Gorbachev to congratulate him on his trip here and to talk about the 1,000-mile, two-month dog sled and ski expedition that, you know, the team that traveled across the Bering Bridge and all of that, and to present Gorbachev with a jacket and some books and other things, and to work towards more cooperation on a park, apparently, related to the whole Bering area.
Mm-hmm.
And then an Associated Press reporter from the Moscow Bureau started questioning Gorbachev in Russian. And we couldn't make heads or tails of it because we don't speak Russian, but apparently the topic was Israel, and I suspect the topic might have been the issue of Soviet emigres to Israel and the occupied territories.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. Mm-hmm. We'll check back with you in a little bit. We're going to go off now and join Lauren Amoto back at the Radisson Plaza, or outside the Radisson Plaza. He's meeting with some, or talking with some business leaders.
Strengths and weaknesses, and I think, as the president said, we should share our strengths, and through the sharing of our strengths, we'll have increased opportunities for both countries.
All right, we've just been talking with Dr. Robert Waller of the Mayo Foundation there, Gary Eichten, Lauren Amoto here live on the street outside the Marriott, and Harvey McKay is with us here. You kind of got included in that meeting at the last minute, I understand.
I wanted to know who's the chairman of the weather.
It's like a little chilly out here.
That's what I want to know.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you think of Gorbachev?
I'd have to say my impressions are pretty much the same as virtually everyone in the room. I think on a 1 to 10, they would give him very, very high grades. I think he really said something substantively. He spoke without notes. He said, hey, you want to take a risk? Come on along. We've got a good memory. We will help the ones that can help us. Our backs are to the wall. We've made all kinds of mistakes. We've given the people the economic freedom. And after 25 years, we've told them what to do from the top. And they don't know what to do, our people. You know, with the economic freedom. So we have very serious, problems.
You've got kind of a reputation for encouraging risk-taking in a lot of ways. Do you think the Soviet Union seems like a good
deal,
a good risk now?
Again, if 10 or 20% of what he says comes true, I mean, I think that's good news for Minnesotans. I think it's good news for Americans. If these super corporations that do business with, I'm talking about the Honeywell's, Control Data's, the Cray Research's, Medtronic's, if they're going to do business with the Soviet Union and continue Cargill's to do business, that creates jobs for Minnesotans. He did say, we need entrepreneurs, we need risk takers, we need your system, but give us some time. And so, I mean, you have to say one thing.
Can you unconditionally, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Surely, no, you have to say one thing. There are very few American businessmen that could get up and talk for 49 straight minutes. A nod to the supreme Soviets that were right there at the head table. Okay, if I say this, how am I doing? Get his okay, mention people in the audience, have gestures, and then give a sound, talk. I think you have to salute and applaud that, and he certainly looks sincere. Can anyone judge the sincerity? Can anyone judge whether he'll be there in 2 years? I don't know those answers. But I'll tell you one thing, he has changed the face of the earth.
Okay, do you think that at this point you can make any kind of unconditional recommendation for the Soviet Union for an entrepreneur, someone who wants to deal in...
I was almost invited over there 3 months ago to be, the first American businessman to appear on national television. His spokesman happened to get up and say... what we need is Swim with the Sharks without being eaten alive. My book in front of about 1,000 people in Mexico going back a year ago. Mm-hmm. So my book is going to be translated into Russian 6 months from now. And I would just say one thing, that I think the more Americans that they see, the more Olympics that we have. I happen to be a believer in the Olympics. Anytime you get adversaries in the room, it's good news.
All right, thanks so much.
You're
Harvey
welcome.
McKay, appreciate it. That's Harvey McKay speaking with us after just emerging from that meeting with Mikhail Gorbachev. And down here, Gary, I'm not sure you didn't hear quite a lot of that, but we were able to talk to some folks from Mayo and also some folks from some of the other businesses. Talk to a gentleman who makes those little donut machines, for one thing.
Yeah, now what did he think?
Well,
and how did he get in the meeting?
Well, he was in the meeting apparently from early on and was included because his company is very much a multinational company. He's dealing with, 80 and 81 countries at a time, that kind of thing. And he's selling those machines all over the place. He is going to be moving into the Soviet Union with an operation very shortly here. And he wanted to nail down some imponderables as far as the patents and that kind of thing, the Soviet subservation of patent treaties.
Ed Anderson is his name?
That's Ed Anderson of the Lil Orbits. I have to make sure not to put the T's in there because it is spelled L-I-L, Lil Orbits donut machine.
And they're going to take those state fair donuts to the Soviet Union.
They're going to change the flavor a little bit, Gary. He told us that he thinks that the Soviets might enjoy a little bit blander donut than the people do here in the United States, whatever that means. We're going to try and get over to Kirk Carlson here in just a moment. He's about 12
right.
feet away from us, and I'm at the end of my cable right now. But
right.
we're going to see if we can't get him hustled over to this position. This meeting, when it broke up pretty quickly, People
well,
kind
it started
of scattered
very
to the four winds here.
It started very quickly, too. I was talking a moment ago about Mrs. Gorbachev and what she did. You know, she stopped at a store. There was some confusion about that. This wire service story I have up on the screen here says that she went into Pepito's Mexican deli takeout food and appeared to be placing an order. I don't know, maybe she didn't like the food they had at the mansion there, the stuff that nobody, that she couldn't pronounce the name of any of it. Maybe it was too fancy.
Well, I don't know. Pepito's has quite a reputation locally, as you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Down on 40th in Chicago.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Very well deserved. And then she stopped at a Snyder's drugstore and bought two plastic Nintendo figures with gum inside.
Well, I don't even know what
he's
Nintendo
wrinkled
figures
his nose
are, so.
Again for the second time.
Well, I wonder if she gave that to the little kids or if she decided to take that home with her as a souvenir.
I don't know.
Anyway, 25 minutes past 7 o'clock, our live coverage on Minnesota Public Radio, the Gorbachev visit continuing. And
are you still with me here, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's hard for me to tell at this end, but I got Sandy Grieve right here from the Minnesota Business Partnerships and Ecolab.
Bill Hodder, the president of the partnership.
A whole group of people.
Mike Wright.
And Mike, are you hearing all this?
Yes.
Bill Hodder.
We got it.
And Michael Wright. So basically, the whole business partnership here, as Sandy Grieve says, you folks, you had a chance there to hear Gorbachev firsthand extemporize for something like 45, 49 minutes. What do you make of that, Sandy Grieve?
Well, it was a clear effort on his part to be very candid about the circumstances in the Soviet Union as we all perceive them to be today, and to encourage people to overlook the current difficulties and make a bet that they're going to succeed in changing their culture as well as their economy. And those businessmen with the courage to make that bet and get in on the ground floor will be well remembered by the Soviet leadership. And I think you boil it down, that was what he was here to tell us.
Anything in there for Minnesota in particular?
Not specifically. He's encouraging businesses of any kind, but he has particular hope for the ag business related and transportation related businesses were particularly touched, and telecommunications. He touched specifically on all three of those.
Okay, let me ask Michael Wright of Super Value here. Anything from your point of view as running one of the larger grocery operations, of course, in the United States, any way that you could take advantage of Soviet trade that you see?
Well, Lauren, at this particular time, I think that, the best that we can do is to help the Soviet Union with technology and distribution and other things. They really aren't in a position at this point in time to have a food distribution system such as we have in the United States. He did comment on the fact that they acknowledge that so much of their product is lost from the time they grow it to the time it gets to the citizens. And he cited some evidence in the potatoes, and we know the same thing goes on with apples. They have a massive problem to overcome, but I think the main thing is he's saying, come help us. And I think American business is remarkable in the fact that they try very hard to help not only the communities they operate in our own country, but they're willing to help the Soviet Union on a fair basis.
Is there a way the SuperValu can translate its experience with food distribution into the Soviet experience?
I think we can help in distribution technology a great deal if we're asked. You know, I mean, you can't rush over there and say, here, we're going to tell you how to do it. I think most businesses that don't have ability to trade directly with them would really say, if you need help, we'll give it. We are currently helping many countries in many companies in South America, Pacific Rim, and now we're doing some work in Poland and in Hungary in terms of advice. And that's really the best thing we can do right now, Lauren.
All right, thanks so much. Yeah. Michael Wright of SuperValu Stores, and I'm going to just move over here for just a moment because Kirk Carlson now has joined us. He's speaking with our Gail Marks Jarvis, and I think we're going to just jump in on this conversation, if that's all right. Here's Kirk Carlson of Carlson Companies. Hello, Mr. Carlson. Lauren Amoto, Minnesota Public Radio. You are,
thank you, Gail.
You are here hosting the Soviet president in your own hotel.
The whole thing here. And it went without a hitch. We made a big impression on everybody how we can handle a situation like
that. Well,
there
was one hitch. I understand somebody else had the room booked for this Sunday. Isn't that so? For a wedding reception or something?
Oh, that wasn't a hitch. That was, we had to clear the entire fourth floor. That was from the security people ordered it. And we had to have them out of there by 1:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. We didn't know which floor they wanted to take.
I see.
So, but they were on the main, generally speaking, they were all very generous and agreed to move to other floors, but you have to make a little financial adjustment and not charge them for the rooms. And you just got to do that when you take on a project as big as this.
Well, now, you had, of course, already quite a few Soviet ties established, what with the opening of the Radisson in Moscow there.
That's
you
right.
Anything here that gives you a better idea of what's going on?
I talked with the president about that, and we had our pictures taken and together, and we are hoping that we can. We would like to have one more hotel in Moscow. They've got, we're in the travel business, you know, we're the largest travel company in North America here in Canada. And so we got a big pent-up demand that I'm trying to get, but you got to have rooms for them to stay in.
So you see that as the problem with
Soviet
travel?
That's the problem. That's the problem right now. So you can only take with, they got a lot of sleazy rooms. But you can't take and put Americans that are spending the money to go over there and put them. They certainly got to have bathrooms in their own. But those rooms will be coming on board, and we're going to have a nice hotel that is up to the standards of the American.
Well, let me just ask you, what do you take away from this meeting then, other than a picture of you with the Soviet president?
I'm taking away optimism.
Okay.
And I think we all went out very optimistic about the opportunity to go over and compete. That's a big market. They're a huge market. And they need everything. All they got to do is get the rubles. But if the Americans invest like they felt up there in opening plants, they'll get those rubles.
And Carlson Companies plans to continue investing?
Yes, we do.
All right,
we
thank you much.
We're investing in, we're going into a lot of the eastern countries. And we're negotiating with a half a dozen right now. So we want to have it all covered.
All right, thanks much.
Okay, thank you.
It's Kirk Carlson of Carlson Companies. And, of course, his hotel, the Radisson Plaza down here, was the one that played host to this whole business meeting today.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. Good job getting all those people together. And, of course, the business aspects of this Gorbachev visit continuing, Bob Potter.
Yes, indeed. The motorcade has just arrived at Control Data headquarters in Bloomington, where President Gorbachev will be going inside and presumably making a you know, making a couple of comments to the control data employees in there, looking at a control data computer exhibit. Mm-hmm. I should take a second to remind you that Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley.
Quick question for you, Evelyn David Heiser, University of Minnesota political scientist, Russian expert, if you will. Is this tough for the Soviet leadership to come over here and essentially beg American businesses to come and do business in their country?
Gorbachev has made it, or has tried to make it seem like anything but begging. What he has said over and over again is, we do not want aid from the United States. We want cooperation. Mm-hmm. In other words, we don't want to be a third world country that gets foreign aid. We want to deal with you on business-like terms. We want to be forced to improve ourselves. What I found curious, listening to the reactions of the business people who were at the hotel today, is no talk whatsoever about political stability in the Soviet Union. They have much more confidence, it would seem to me, in the future political stability of the country than many commentators have had in recent days. They're not worried about Gorbachev's fortunes interrupting the investment climate.
I suppose the thought is, no matter who's in charge, they're going to need widgets, so...
Mm-hmm. We are now seeing via the pool video feed a very, very familiar sight. That is Mikhail Gorbachev getting out of a limousine and being surrounded by lots of people, lots of photographs being taken. We may be able to get some of the audio from this, too. We'll just have to listen and see. There it is in the background. I don't hear him saying anything. I don't hear anything being translated, so I assume that that's just the sound of the crowd that we're listening to at the moment. I should mention, Gary, that at the same time as we talk about all this high technology, this element of the Gorbachev trip, there is an ironic and unfortunate thing to report in another area of the news, and that is the death today of Robert Noyce, who was the inventor of the semiconductor. He died at his home in Austin today at the age of 62. He co-founded Fairchild Semiconductor Corporation back in 1957. And working separately, he and a fellow named Jack Kilby of Texas Instruments invented the integrated circuit, which, of course, made computers possible by putting the power of multiple transistors on a single circuit chip. And Mr. Noyce was also one of the founders of Intel, now the nation's third largest semiconductor producer. Just something to take note of as President Gorbachev enters the Controlled Data Corporation headquarters building out in Bloomington tonight.
I think they're giving him a look at one of those big mainframe computers that Controlled Data is hoping to sell to the Soviet Union. In fact, the deal has been worked out to sell the computers, but they apparently still need official U.S. permission for the deal to go through. For years and years, of course, the U.S. government was very skittish about selling any kind of high technology product to the Soviet Union, lest the Soviets turn it into some sort of a military application.
All right. President Gorbachev is at the Control Data Headquarters building right now. He'll be there for about, according to the schedule, about another, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. Then he will take off down Interstate 494 to the airport, where he will meet up with wife Raisa, who presumably is finishing up her visit at the Watson home in South Minneapolis. They will board their plane, and they will be on their way to San Francisco.
One of the interesting things about this, we hear so much about high tech and new business opportunities and so on. The United States has been doing a lot of agriculture business with the Soviet Union for a long time. And Minnesota visit of President Gorbachev has raised the expectations of farmers.
All right, we better go off back now to Control Data. We have Lawrence Perlman, the chairman of CDC, in this pool feed, which is a little iffy.
Several critically important agreements, including an agreement on peaceful uses of atomic energy. In addition, the U.S. government has indicated that it will soon approve, subject to a special agreement, the export to the Soviet Union of 6 controlled data computers to be used for civilian nuclear safety. These understandings inaugurate a new era of bilateral cooperation in nuclear power safety and related matters. Nuclear safety is truly a global concern, and it must be one of mankind's highest priorities. But it can only be guaranteed if we work together using computers like this Cyber 960 and other advanced technologies to solve common problems. Other forms of technological cooperation can have the same mutually beneficial effects, particularly in addressing global concerns such as the environment and other economic and social issues. Mr. President, I'm sure I speak for the entire American business community in saying that we look forward to new opportunities to work with the people of the Soviet Union to build enduring ties between our two countries. And now, Mr. President, I invite you to step over to the computer where Bill Selden, a control data engineer, will demonstrate for you how computers can improve civilian nuclear plant safety.
Well, I don't think you have to have a lot of imagination to figure out what's going on now. Indeed, President Gorbachev is going to go over there and take a look at that machine and ensure that it will perform faultlessly.
They're going to use that to try to improve the safety of nuclear power plants in the Soviet Union.
Evelyn, what do you think about these machines here and the use of them in this capacity?
Well, it's certainly critical, not just for the Soviet Union, but for Eastern Europe. We hear a lot about the environmental problems, and especially for the Eastern European countries, the only economically viable alternative to the coal that they've been using that's wreaked devastation on the environment is nuclear energy.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that can improve the safety of the nuclear power industry, not just in the Soviet Union, but in Eastern Europe as well, is critical. What's striking to me is Gorbachev at Control Data, something that 6 years ago one never would have expected to see a Soviet leader at a U.S. high-tech firm. And we take it for granted today. Very striking.
In a closed city.
In a closed city.
That's right.
Mr. McMillan noted.
Right. Well, let's listen to a little of this pool feed now. This, again, coming from Control Data Headquarters, where President Gorbachev is getting an explanation of the way the machine operates.
Rotated about. The engineers could analyze what was wrong with it and what had to be done to repair it. They could see the workspace available around it. Once they had made their decision, they could go back to the original design and pass this information off to the construction people to make the correction. By using products like this, we end up with a safer nuclear design because the information is readily available to all the engineers. The demonstration that you've seen here of Control Data products helps produce that effective design, and it's being used worldwide by engineers right now.
Where is this used besides
it's used
plants
in,
here in the States?
In France, by EDF. It's used, we have just sold to India. It's used in Australia. And it's used in England.
Evelyn, do you think that the Control Data people are going to be able to get an export license to sell this thing?
Well, that's another question. I mean, the U.S. government has had a bad record isn't quite the right way to put it, but certainly hasn't been extremely forthcoming when it comes to exporting this sort of technology to the Soviet Union, yet the relationship has changed so tremendously. And the issue of U.S. export limitations and U.S. competitiveness in Soviet markets has become so much more important on the agenda of U.S. business leaders, that prospects certainly seem better.
Well, isn't one of the issues not only that at one time the Soviets could conceivably have used a machine like this for military purposes or spy purposes or something like that, but now, what about the concern that maybe they could sell the technology to old Libya or Cuba or some country with which the United States has less than friendly relations?
I think that should be less of a concern. It should have always been less of a concern. I mean, the Soviets, if anything, have always been forthcoming on the issue of non-proliferation. They were never eager to see other countries join the nuclear club.
Let's go back and join President Gorbachev again, still at Control Data.
...at the Chernobylsky nuclear plant after the accident.
Так что его здесь присутствие – это гарантия того, что здесь заявляются реальные интересы Советского Союза в сотрудничестве в этой очень важной сфере.
His presence here today indicates that the Soviet Union has a real interest in developing cooperation in this extremely important and vital area.
Очевидно, сегодня ситуация так обстоит, что наши оценки, я имею в виду в данном случае оценки наших компетентных ученых, и ваших, и наших, состоят в том, что нам без атомной энергетики не обойтись.
Well, the situation today is that according to assessments and evaluations of scientists, both yours and ours, the situation is that we cannot really do without nuclear energy today.
Если учесть, что по многим своим качествам этот вид энергии имеет огромные преимущества, но и огромная опасность заключена здесь одновременно, то возникает большая мировая проблема сделать так, чтобы эти станции во всех отношениях были бы надежными, абсолютно надежными, если это допустимо в науке, но в гражданском обиходе это допустимо.
Well, if we take into account the fact that according to many qualities and parameters, nuclear, this particular type of energy has a lot of advantages, but it also entails a lot of risks, then we are faced with this big problem of international nature, namely, what can we do in order to ensure as much as possible these plants, to make them as safe as possible? Of course, we cannot do so in absolute terms, but this is something that we must pursue, especially in the civilian sector.
Чтобы не оказаться в смешном положении в окружении компетентных людей, я сейчас быстро эту часть своей речи сверну.
Well, in order to avoid the ridiculous situation in which I might find myself in the presence of so competent people as you are, I will cut down on this particular portion of my speech.
Я скажу просто. И я уже только сейчас сказал, когда на встрече с представителями бизнеса. Мы приветствуем этот новый шаг в нашем экономическом сотрудничестве на одном из перспективных направлений.
I will say simply this. I already, in fact, have just discussed this with representatives of the business community here. We do welcome and applaud this new step in our economic cooperation and in a number of areas.
Мне сказали, что ваш штат еще закрытый штат, но через эту компанию он уже открывается, и главное, в сторону своего самого злейшего врага Советского Союза.
Well, I was told that your state is a closed state, but right now it's beginning to open toward the Soviet Union, that is to say, your arch enemy.
Как все быстро меняется.
See how fast things are changing.
Хорошо, что так меняется.
And it's very good that they are changing.
live coverage of President Gorbachev at Control Data Headquarters in Bloomington.
This is the best possible argument in my support.
Я хочу пожелать успешного сотрудничества вашей фирме и нашим организациям на этом очень важном участке взаимодействия.
And in closing, I would like to extend the best wishes for successful cooperation between your corporation and our respective organizations in this extremely important area of interaction.
И два слова о первой части визита, которая закончилась сегодня в 11 часов дня в Вашингтоне.
And a couple of remarks about the first part of my visit, which ended formally today at 11 o'clock in Washington.
Мне кажется, я уже многое сказал на этом, но кажется, самое главное, что хватило мудрости, ответственности, решительности, политической воли президентам двух стран в связи с тем, что они пошли в этой непростой обстановке на такие решительные шаги, которые сближают наши народы и наши страны и открывают огромные возможности для того, чтобы эти два великих народа жили в мире и сотрудничали, и чтобы они переходили через от соперничества к партнерству, а и затем к дружбе и плодотворному взаимодействию.
It seems to me, and this is something that I have spoken a lot about, seems to me that the most important thing today is to emphasize that both presidents, the presidents of the two countries, that is, had enough wisdom, enough responsibility and determination, as well as political will, in spite of the complex and difficult situation as it exists today, they were still able to take some very important steps intended to bring closer together our two peoples and our two countries in order to open up more opportunities for the peoples of our two countries to live in peace, to cooperate with each other, so as to move away from confrontation and competition and rivalry toward partnership and friendship.
То, что состоялось и произошло в эти дни, обещает многого хорошего, значительного для наших двух народов, и, я думаю, для всех народов, для всего мирового содружества. Такова уж участь этих двух государств, что даже тогда, когда они решают самые простые вопросы двухсторонних отношений, это оказывает огромное влияние на весь мир.
And what has been going on during these days offers a promise of many good and significant accomplishments and results for our two peoples. In fact, I would say for all peoples of the world and for the entire international community. Well, but such is the lot of our two countries, that even when they are confronted with the most simple issues or problems concerning bilateral relations between them, whatever they do or decide really influences the whole world.
Я думаю, мы поладили с нынешним руководством вашей страны совершенно по ясным причинам.
I believe that we have been able to get along just fine with the incumbent leadership of your country for the very simple reason.
Наши люди, американцы и советские люди, не отвергает ту старую политику, которая столько так дорого обошлась нашим народам, столько ресурсов она измотала и бросила впустую, что мы оказались с вами в такой ситуации, что сейчас трудно из нее даже выйти, и все же мы начали выходить. Поэтому я верю в перспективную, хорошую перспективу этой политики, потому что народы, по-моему, наших стран уже не позволят другую проводить.
Our peoples, the Soviet and American peoples, that is, do reject the old policies, the policies that cost so much to our people and yours, the policies that were, that squandered and wasted a lot of resources of our two countries. In fact, so much that today we have found ourselves in a very difficult situation, or out of which it is difficult to find an exit, but still we have undertaken such effort toward that end. Therefore, I believe in the good prospects of this particular policy that has been undertaken currently between our two countries, because the peoples of our two countries from now on will not allow us to pursue any different policy.
Может, кому-то и покажется неожиданными решения, которые были приняты в эти дни.
Perhaps somebody may find somewhat surprising those decisions that have been made during these days.
Но мой ответ всем скептикам состоит в том, что и мою позицию, и я уверен, позицию президента Буша питала и вдохновляла поддержка наших народов. Я хочу в этом месте, где речь идет о жизни, о труде, о безопасности, сказать нашим народам огромную признательность, что они поддержали руководителей своих стран на этом поворотном этапе в развитии наших отношений. Thank you.
Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev speaking live at Control Data Headquarters out in Bloomington, Minnesota.
And let's pick up once again on Chairman Lawrence Perelman from Control
Data. Nourished very much by the support that has been provided to us by our respective people. So it is here in this particular place today where great care is taken to ensure safety or working conditions of people that I would like to express our appreciation to all people for their support that they have provided to the leaders of our two countries during these days. Thank you very much.
Of course, that was the translation of President Gorbachev's final comments. I don't know. All right. That's going to about wrap it up from the Control Data Headquarters. President Gorbachev will be getting back in the motorcade, heading back to the airport. Raisa Gorbachev is already at the airport awaiting the arrival of her husband. And it's been, let's see, just about 7 hours since we have talked with Mike Mulcahy out at the airport. Let's go out there and see if he's still there. Michael?
Indeed, I'm still here, Bob. Good afternoon. I know you'd been talking earlier about whether these events where the Gorbachevs met with the public were stage managed or not.
Yes.
Well, this one was stage managed, I can say, at least to some extent. The press, as you say, has been waiting out here all day, and some of us were at the very front of the line, ready to see what was happening here. And about 45 minutes ago, they made us all move, and we had to move back up and above the crowd while they moved in, they say, 600 to 700 people, just ordinary people, to meet the Gorbachevs. As you say, Mrs. Gorbachev is here. She pulled up in her half of the motorcade just about 3 minutes ago, and now she's moving through and shaking hands. Lola Perpich is with her. A number of other dignitaries and such are with her. There's another musical group playing. This time it's the Greater Twin Cities Youth Symphony and a choir with voices from the Bel Canto Voices, Metropolitan Boys Choir, and Angelica Cantanti. I think I pronounced that right, but I probably didn't. Anyway, those are all children's choirs, and they're providing some music here. And I guess now we're just waiting for President Gorbachev to come over from Control Data. It's not a very long drive, as you know, and we expect him here in a few minutes. They've also set up a microphone here at the airport, so I imagine we'll have some sort of speeches to wrap this up, although the original schedule I know was for them to take off at about 8:05, and it looks like they're going to stick closer to that than we had originally heard. Originally, they had changed that to 8:35. Now it looks like they may get off the ground before that. Bob, you'll remember there were four planes here total, three Soviet planes and a U.S. government plane. One of those Soviet planes has taken off already, presumably on its way to San Francisco. That's some Soviet staff people and some advanced people, so they're already gone. And now we're just waiting for the closing ceremonies here at the airport.
All right, Mike. It looks to me, Gary, from what I can make out of the video monitor there, that the Control Data part of the visit is just about wrapped up. Is that right?
I think so. Looks like he's heading out the door.
There he is.
And should be getting back in his limo here soon. Evelyn Davidheiser, what do you think? Overall, a successful visit? Did Gorbachev accomplish what he came here to do?
He seems to have. The enthusiasm generated among the business community here seems to be sincere. There seems to be a readiness to knock down the doors and get into the Soviet market. I think he did quite well with them, and I think that's what he came here intending to do.
Will people in the Soviet Union, even as we speak, be eager to learn more about Minnesota?
Well, that I'm not so sure. I think they're eager to have increased U.S. economic activity in the Soviet Union. I don't think they care whether that comes from Minnesota or from someplace else.
In fact, from what the young lady at Radio Moscow was telling us earlier today, basically the people in the Soviet Union aren't paying a whole lot of attention to the entire trip that Gorbachev made. Their main concerns are what's going on with their economy, where are the food products coming from, what about the store shelves, what's going to be there tomorrow, that kind of thing, which I guess you obviously are a little more concerned about your own activities on tomorrow as opposed to some of these faraway things that are a little more abstract.
Bob, looks like the motorcade is heading off to the airport now. The Gorbachev limo is leaving. Soviet president waving as become his custom throughout this 7-plus-hour visit.
We still haven't seen any of the security cars that come a little before the motorcade yet, so I imagine they'll be showing up here in just a few minutes at the airport. As far as we can tell, our line of sight isn't great here, but as far as we can tell, Mrs. Gorbachev is still meeting with some of the people who have assembled here and shaking hands. There are a number of children here. I understand some of the families of the people who work here at the base, some of the military people, and some of the families of even the security people. I was standing earlier next to the brother-in-law of one of the Secret Service officials. So they have moved a crowd in here, and they're trying to keep it as secure as possible. And I guess the Gorbachevs are going to meet with the crowds again. They've been doing it all day. I don't know why they should stop now.
We will continue our live coverage. We have canceled all of our regularly scheduled programming today on Minnesota Public Radio so we can bring you a live broadcast of the Gorbachev trip from the arrival to the departure. This coverage is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla, Spear, and Beardsley. And you're listening to member-supported Minnesota Public Radio. This is KNOW, Minneapolis-St. Paul. In the Twin Cities, a low expected in the 30s tonight. It'll be a little warmer tomorrow.